So we wanted to begin by just anything, if there's anything that kind of is bubbling up from the break that you really wanted to share or ask. So we'll start with Jackie, and we start. Then we'll go to a virtual question, and then we'll go to you. And then we're going to talk about creativity and inspiration. So, Jackie.
Yeah, okay. So, well, first I wanted to check the money-back guarantee for if your head explodes.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope you have some cash on you.
Okay, all right. I'm waiting.
Because while all that was going on before, and I was listening, but I was like, okay, so it's from, and it's to, and it's, you know, like if you flip the head around, then it's like can come in from there. And I was listening, and at the very end, you just sort of threw it away. You said, you were talking about the TED Talk, I think. Yeah, and I was working on it, and I played over there. And it just went, and I thought of, I haven't actually read the book or seen the movie, but it's a book and a movie, and it's like, it's this great title I've never forgotten, At Play in the Fields of the Lord, mm-hmm. And that's what this is for me. I just got that, that it's play. Mm-hmm. And the things, like, I really want to do that money course. Hmm. Don't have the money yet. A lot of thinking, a lot of strategizing. Hmm. Got some world-class support. And the truth is, I'll make it or I won't. I'll have the money in time or I won't. All I know right now is the window of opportunity is still open. Right now. So far as the writing and what's it for and what am I gonna this and maybe I should blog and, you know, should it be poems, should it be essays, should it be that, you know, and it's important. And it doesn't matter. You know, I'll do what I do or not do what I do. But it's what I used to think. See, I thought I couldn't write because I didn't have anything to say. And what I got was my not having anything to say, that's the reason to write. Because what comes from up there, not necessarily worthless stuff, it could be clever. There's stuff going on up there. I could do some, you know, maybe interesting things from there. But I don't know that would make much, it would be what it would be. But what comes from there can impact the world, and it will have, not like, I'm going to write something for the world, but you know, that's where the power, that's where what's real is, that's where what can make a difference is. And I can have it be, I can honor the fact that it's important to me without being delusional about the fact that it's really important. So, thanks you guys.
Cool.
If we have a couple hours to go, but it was so funny.
Top that.
Yeah. No, because there was this little voice, you know, kind of all morning going. So are we going to talk about creativity? And then I just got the biggest insight ever about my creativity. So, cool.
Thank you, Jackie. Annette.
She says, how do you know if physical symptoms such as anxiety or depression are a result of just getting absorbed in your thinking, or if there's something physically, psychologically within the body that needs to be addressed through medication due to hormonal or chemical imbalance in the brain or body, or has been absorbed in thought for too long, has been what was created the chemical hormonal change physically?
Dr. Howard.
So they're saving the easy question, the hard questions for last, huh? Okay, so here's what I do. You have to go back to the truth. You get a question about yourself like that, and you're wondering about these physiological symptoms that come from anxiety or depression, you hear there's a chemical imbalance and go, well, what's the truth? Let's start Let's go back to what the truth is. So the first part of that is you can't have anything that we would call anxiety or depression without thought creating thinking. There's no way you can have that physiological expression without thought. Now, we're talking again about a spiritual energy that comes before anything happens physically. You don't see that forming. What you get is the reaction to that thought. That's what you see. It's either emotions, it could be the physiological reaction, because when you get into what you might call anxiety thinking, your body responds to the thinking you're doing. Remember, all of you responds to what you're creating. So to find an understanding, you have to go back to the fact that there's a spiritual essence to who you are. That's before what everybody's talking about in the physical form. And that's where you look to try to get an understanding of it. So how I look at that is people suffering from depression and anxiety having all kinds of physiological feeling or reactions or feeling something in their body. However, if you start to look at the fact that all of that is a reaction to thought, you have a chance to transcend it. You have a chance to not be frightened by being in the experience of your thinking. And as you can think in a better way, everything else follows as well. Your brain chemistry and your physiology all follow your thought, follow the creation of thought. Now, what I have seen in the field, again, is that it comes from what is produced to try to be of help. And of course, brain chemistry changes and physiology changes according to the kind of thinking you've been living in over time, the kind of thinking you're living in. But you want to see that that's just the reaction to the spiritual nature of who we are, that we're creating thinking, and that thinking is creating what we're feeling or experiencing or our physiology. Now, sometimes in my work, and my work, I've seen thousands of people over the years, and sometimes people are so caught up in a reaction that medicine helps. But here's what happens to that. When people come to me after they've taken medicine, you know, and they're feeling better, they think it's the medicine. But in actuality, what's happened is their thinking has changed. I don't care what medicines you take. If your thinking doesn't change, it's not going to have any impact on you. So what I want to help people see is there's something else going on besides what's being provided physically. There's something else going on that if you can recognize will help you. So I have somebody, recently this young man I was talking to you about last night, who is suffering from anxiety, and he has had the thought whenever he goes out to dinner that somebody's put something in his food. And, of course, it's hard. He gets all anxious about that. And even if he has succeeded in not thinking that, on the drive home, if his body feels funny, he thinks that's because somebody put something in his food. Now, last week he came in and said, I had a week of not having that thinking. And so I said, well, that's wonderful. What did you see? And we talked a bit about that. And I said, now, did your body feel funny at all? He said, yeah, but I realized that that was just like how bodies feel. They feel funny sometimes, and it had nothing to do with food. It just had something. I could think about it like that again, but I just had shifted inside. I don't know why. And it didn't look to me anymore that that would be reasonable to think. So if you're suffering from depression or anxiety, you want to go back to the truth of the matter. That I'm not saying that there's anything wrong in having those feelings or symptoms. It's just that you want to begin to look in the direction of the spiritual nature to how thought creates that. You cannot have any experience you would call anything, boredom, anything like that without thought. There's no way it would exist without thought. Insecurity. All of that must exist because of thought, the way you're thinking. And you keep looking there. It's just like this woman I shared about earlier this morning. She woke up to the fact that every day she was reminding herself that she's a depressed person. And, you know, once that happens, that's what you are. You know, and then your friends say to you, but look at your life, you know. You've got a wonderful family. You've got a nice job. And what do they say? Because they're in the reality of their thinking. They say, you don't live in my shoes. Because they're in the reality of their thinking. But what you want to see, even if you're caught in that, thinking will change. Thinking will change. Even if you're seriously depressed, you're not always going to be at the same level all day long. You're not. And you want to start looking at that. I know this is a long answer. I'm going to try to sum it up, but I have one other thought. I worked for one of my postdoctoral fellowships at the VA Veterans Administration in San Francisco in their day treatment center where people were suffering from very serious mental problems. And there were people who were so depressed they couldn't move or talk. But you know what? In 6 hours of being with them, they were not at the same level. They were still depressed, but they were not at the same level. Why? Thinking changes. Thinking will not be the same. Now, the overall feeling you have about yourself may look like the same, but your thinking is going to be changing throughout the day. And you want to start looking there. But you don't want to be wedded to having something wrong with your brain or your physiology when you're suffering from anxiety or depression, because you are the energy of mind. You are the energy of mind. And you will never, ever, no matter what the brain chemistry, lose that connection. And that's what you want to start looking at. You don't want to start looking at physiology and brain chemistry. That will scare you. It will. It scares me when I used to think there's something wrong with me. One more thing. This is outside of depression and anxiety, but I want to share with you how we are all connected to mind and the feeling of love and happiness. It is there, and that's where you want to look. My stepmother had a major stroke and was in dementia. And at first, I thought I needed to fix her delusions. So I would come in the afternoon, and she would say, she could not move. And she would say, I've been cooking all day, your favorite meal, go have some lunch. She's bedridden. I would try to fix that. Oh, no, you can't cook or something like that. And one day, I'm sitting with her. She's in a wheelchair. And she said something like, our friend, Dolly, just showed me a new way to cook chicken. You get chicken, and you dunk it in boiling water for a minute, and it's cooked. It's delicious. And I just started rolling on the floor laughing. And she started laughing, almost falling out of her wheelchair. We're laughing 10 minutes. In a beautiful feeling, the two of us. And it dawned on me, that's how to be. This beautiful feeling of connection, of our connection to mind, showed itself. And it was just deeply loving feeling. And I realized that that's all that she needed. Now, here she is in dementia, no memory. But listen to this. Every time I showed up, most of the times I showed up, after that, she would tell the story. Why? The feeling. She remembered the feeling. So I don't want you to look at yourself with limitations in the physical form. Not to say that brain chemistry doesn't change. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm saying don't stop there. Don't look as if that's you. Look to what you truly are and start to see how the thing you're calling depression and the physiological feelings you're experiencing from anxiety is being created through thought. And try to stay reflected to see something new there. So I hope that was helpful. I know that was a long answer. So I hope that helped.
Editor's note, cut that bit out. We're going to use that. That was really amazing. Thank you. That was brilliant. I just got an image as you at the end there. It was, that's not you. That's the creation. That's the creation. That's in a way, that's what we've been talking about all yesterday when we were talking about self-improvement. You know, that's, you're trying to improve something that is already created. You know, Keith Blevins, I think, was the one who used to use the analogy of it's like we don't realize that we have an oven and that there's fresh cookies coming out all the time. And so we take the burnt cookies and put sugar on them and sprinkles and decorate them to try and make them better. There's a new batch of cookies coming. And if that one's no good, there'll be a new batch of cookies coming. And that's what I heard.
You know, I just want to say one other thing because I don't want people to take this the wrong way. You know, you hear, I'm talking from this place in me and I don't know how I sound. That doesn't mean I don't take seriously when somebody's suffering. It doesn't mean that I try to do all the help that's available to them, including medicines. They're so helpful. But you don't stop there. That's my message. There's more to you than that. There's more to you. And the more your thinking gets healthy, your brain gets healthy. Your body gets healthy. That's the power you are. So I just wanted to also add that piece to it.
I don't know how helpful this is or not, but I wanted to share that I've had an experience since learning the principles last Christmas, I think. I've been an anxious and neurotic New Yorker for my whole life, and it allowed some space that gave me an opportunity to feel less... I've been thinking about the quickest, easiest way to say this. Anxious my whole life, and also grew up with food and body image stuff that I'm sure is really common. And I became quite a hobbyist nutritionist. And once I was able to relax and not take my thinking so seriously, the way I needed to nourish myself properly just became, it just landed. And since then, I feel pretty incredible. So I guess just to add to that, because obviously, like, realizing the truth of things needs to come first. And the truth of... well, just knowing that the universe is a friendly place and you're not broken. And when you know that and you have space for, like, insight to come along, you realize, oh, and anyway, I'm rambling on. I just wanted to say that I'm not anxious. I don't have the physical problems that I had. I wish I was so much more eloquent right now because this is really good. I just didn't have it ready to say. but like my physical ailments, like I was quite a sick kid and they've all healed and they've healed. I've had like a big rocket jump up in the healing since I've discovered what I've discovered since not thinking so much. Okay, that's it.
Thank you.
If that made any
sense. Thank you.
So,
thank you.
I can't believe that's actually
going to work. You guys, it's okay. What's great is you and Mark can have a chat about nutrition later.
Oh, you mean the junk food? Yeah. Oh, I got it. I was a little slow on the uptake there.
So what Mark and I were talking about creativity and talking about wisdom and trying to flesh out why those felt like two different conversations to me. And in our conversation, a couple of things became apparent. One is what we'll start talking about, which is how they're different and what they are. But the other is that we're making up this distinction to talk about it. There's not really two different energies, one of which is creativity, mm-hmm. and the other which is wisdom, mm-hmm. one of which is inspiration and the other which is something else. It's one energy. But by creating a distinction around it, it's easier to see. It's easier to talk about. So don't want this to become a conversation about, now, which one is which? No, neither, because we made them up. But hopefully, within the distinctions that we're going to make, you'll see something useful for yourself. Does that make sense? Okay. So when I was trying to explain to Mark what made something part of the creative process to my way of thinking, I realized that it is that there is an output to the process. There is a certain point in the creative process where you can go, ta-da! And you pull the cover off and, you know, roast leg of insurance salesman. Yum, yum. You know, it's an old Flanders and Swan recipe. But you know, there's something at the end of it. There's a new conversation. There's a new painting. There's a new song. There's a new piece of writing. There is a new product. There's a new something. So how does something go from formless to form? Where do our products, our outputs, come from? What is it that allows us, that assists us in creating something from nothing? Or in creating something new from something old? Now, hopefully, rather than waiting for me to tell you the answer to that, That's a point. Remember yesterday, those of you who were here yesterday, I talked about pointing? That's a point to where to look. If you can answer that question for yourself through insight, if you can see something true about that, it's going to change your relationship with it. It's going to open something up in you and for you that is going to make the creative process much easier, much more fluid, much less mysterious and much more ordinary, much less a gift from the gods and much more every day. Now, I don't want to take away, it doesn't take away the magic, the magical feel of it. It still blows me away. You know, we were talking about writing this morning. I mean, I've done 12 books now. I've done, and people say, wow, you must really love writing. I really don't. I don't dislike it. Some days I think it's fun. Some days I don't. But boy, do I love to read what I've written. Because it's not there until it comes into form. And it's looking for yourself, seeing for yourself whatever you can see about, well, where is it before it's on paper? Where is it before I start talking about it? Right? Where was that before you started to articulate it? As she articulated it, it started to take form. It started to become tangible. She started to see it. Halfway through her description, she went, oh, yeah, that's it. So the very act of articulation began to bring the formless into form. Now, that's not the only way, but that's one of the ways that we use thought, that we use this creative spiritual energy to bring the formless into form. And it's the same thing. So an artist will start to sketch something out. And then as they sketch, they'll start to see, oh, it's kind of... And then they can then create from that. And so as you bring it into form, as you bring this formlessness into form, you start to see it. And then you and more thought comes and you go, oh, this is this, or this could be this, or I wonder what it would be like if this was this. And then you can begin to play with it. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, and you mentioned this, Jackie, at some point, you decide you're done. You know this is done. Not that I couldn't necessarily do more. Maybe I could. But this is complete. This energy is complete, at least for now. There may be a new iteration of it. Right? When my first book, 13 drafts, 13 solid drafts, it was 125,000 words, wound up being 62,000. Inside Out Revolution was only a couple of drafts, three drafts, but the third draft had, I did like a rough count, and it was about 45% of version one was in the final version. Now, for me, that wasn't daunting. That was the fun of it. Is I got to go back to the well. I got to go back to the source. Now, this time I brought something with me. So instead of starting completely cold, I had a form, and I took the form back to the well. I took the form back into the space. I took the form into the fields of the Lord, right? And I let that creative energy do something with that. So now there was already some shape. I remember somebody telling me about candle making. I don't know if this is true, but I liked it as a metaphor. That they have a wick, and you dip the wick in the wax, and a bit of wax will stick to it. So now there's a bit of form on it. And then when it goes back into this liquid and you pull it out, more has stuck because there's more surface area. So now more wax has stuck to it. And each time you do that, because you're taking more form into the formless, something new comes out. And then you start to shape it in the form. Now, that's how everything is created. Whatever your tools, whatever your medium, that process is always the same. From formless to form, to formless to form. From nothing to something, to nothing to something. Discuss. Yeah.
Well, what if
But if you have the thought or the form list to the form, and then you see the form, and then you're like, this form sucks.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, you made it sound like it was all so beautiful and everything came out roses when everything.
Well, tell me if this, because here's my experience of it, is, wow, this form sucks. Let me go back to the formless.
Ah. So
let me bake more cookies.
You're not saying this form sucks, I can't form from the formless.
Yeah, I'm not only am I not saying this form sucks, I can't form from the formless. Yeah. What I'm really not doing is I'm not saying what this says about me as a creator and what I need to change about myself so I can be more creative and what I need to do so I can be more disciplined about my creation. I was telling Mark about one of the most funniest coaching sessions I ever had as a client. And I paid this guy, this was about 7-8 years ago, I think, and flew out to see him to get coached on writing. Because I in my mind, I couldn't get myself to write if there wasn't a deadline. Like, I just turned in a writing project yesterday. It was due at 4. It had been ongoing for about 8 weeks, and I turned it in at 3:41. And that was the earliest I can remember ever turning in a project. But I really thought this was problematic. And so I hired a coach who I knew worked with writers, and I knew was an incredibly disciplined. He'd written like 25 books, and you know. And I just thought, okay, I got to figure this out. And he took my money, and he let me fly out, and he sat me down, and he said, "Are you a fucking idiot?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "How many books have you written?" I said, 6. He said, "How have they done?" He said, "Well," I said, "they've all been bestsellers." He said, "Do you ever miss a deadline?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, apparently, this is how you write books." Now, honest to God, I had not noticed. I really thought I was doing it wrong because I was in this. Now, I wasn't in this while I wrote, or nothing would have gotten produced. But as soon as I was done, I went back to this. As soon as I had a bad day at the computer, I went back to this. Now, fortunately, I've never taken my thinking that seriously. Even before I understood the principles, I knew I was an idiot. Right? So it's like that's my negativity's never really held me back the way it's supposed to, if you read self-help. You know, it's like I joke with Davey, you know, if I ever write a spiritual autobiography, it'll be called "Who Knew It Would Actually Work?" Right? But that really looked real to me, to the point where I was willing to fly out and pay money and get this guy to help me get it right. It doesn't work that way. There's an oven. Stuff comes out of the oven all the time. You just got to go back to the oven.
Just lighting the pilot light of that oven. I mean,
the reason we want you to use the mic, it's not that we can't hear you, it's just for the people.
Lighting the pilot light of that oven, that's, you know, stoking the flames and keeping that moving. I mean, it just seems sometimes it becomes so stagnant and it stops. And then I spend all my time in the middle part there going, I got to get out of this. I got to move forward.
So here, we're playing within a metaphor, right? We're talking shit, but we're talking shit for a purpose. Okay? There is no oven. Right?
What?
But there's a value in our talking about one. So here's what that sounds like to me. Here's my experience of that. So here's the oven. Okay? Now the pilot light is always on. The oven works perfect. It doesn't matter how many things you've burned in it. The oven is unaffected. Right? It doesn't matter how many terrible recipes have come through it. Mm-hmm. The oven has gotten no less efficient. Right? But what we do, because we live in thought and we sometimes get so caught up in our personal thinking, we lose connection to this intelligence that we are, this creative intelligence, this infinite intelligence, is we hold the dough here and we go, man, this oven just isn't working. This oven is not heating up. What can I do to get the oven to work better? Well, the problem isn't with the oven. The problem is just that it happens to anyone I know who creates. The problem is that sometimes we forget to put it in the oven. And we try to cook it ourselves out here. It doesn't work that way. Now that's, remember, this isn't anything to do with the recipe. You can have a million recipes, and if you don't put them in the oven, they're not going to bake. Does that make sense? Is that?
Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I'm going to sit down in the oven. Let's see what comes out.
It's just amazing that I will be sitting at a desk for 5 hours and come up with nothing, then go sit down somewhere and have a beer, and that's when the ideas start flowing. It's because you're caught in that.
Yeah. 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 Now, lots of people think it's the beer. But it isn't. It's that what the beer or the walk or the jog or the conversation does is it snaps us out of this. It breaks this spin. And then, boom, as soon as you only have to open the window a crack and poof, the cold air comes in. Right? That's what it does for us. Every creative breakthrough, and there's a lot of research on this, every creative breakthrough involves a complete break from the previous train of thought. It is not evolutionary, it is revolutionary. We have a new thought. Something new comes to mind. It's still on the topic. I'm not saying that it's not necessarily connected to what you were working on before. But it is an interruption and then a something fresh. It's also the secret of humor, right? All comedy, this is a line that I know Davey likes as well. All comedy is the derailing of a train of thought. You think one thing's coming and something different comes, right? Well, that's true in creativity as well in a slightly different way. All creative breakthroughs, all creative insights, all creative inspirations come when the old way of thinking is interrupted. And then either immediately, a beat later, a week later, something new comes. And it's interesting, there are techniques out there in the creativity world that try to force a creative inspiration by generating a really intense train of thought and then interrupting it. So like you have to kind of really get going and really get going, and then you have a timer that goes off and it shocks you. And, you know, I forget whether it was Edison or Dali. It may have actually been both of them. But used to do a thing where they would, I don't have one, but, oh, I can use this. So what they would do is they would get really, really still and quiet, like go into almost like a trance-like state. This is from their writings that we know this. And they would hold a fork, or a metal object. I think with Dali it was a fork, and it was something else with Edison. And when they started to fall asleep, when they fell asleep enough, it would fall to the ground, and the noise it made when it hit the ground would wake them back up. And in that space, where their conscious train of thought stopped, and they came back, something new would come along. Now, I've tried it. Doesn't work for me. But I understand why it would. Because it's making use of the natural flow. Mm-hmm. That it's interrupting the conscious train of thought that we are on about what we should do, whether it's about us or it is about the thing. And it's opening up the space, even a crack, for this spiritual energy to bring something new out of the oven. So you had a question. Let's go to high, and then we'll go to the virtual track. So can we get the? Is there a second? Okay, great. You can share.
So, I think I probably kind of know the answer to this, and you're kind of answering it in the end. But so as an artist and a songwriter, sometimes you get really excited when a certain more technique. Like book comes along recently, the War of Art, mm-hmm. and how to not be an amateur and be a pro and treat your writing like that. And usually it leaves me feeling pretty, first very excited and then pretty bad. Yeah. Like I'm not a pro and I can't do this and I'm not doing it the right way and I gotta set my life up this way. So thinking today that other way doesn't really quite make sense, but it doesn't seem like I've transitioned fully to what you seem to be talking about. I don't know if you could speak more about that.
So here's, and I've met Stephen, and he didn't make me feel like a jerk, which was very nice of him. Because he's like the War of Art, if you haven't read it, it's about being a professional and showing up on, that was part of what sent me to this coach. I mean, that's not Stephen's fault, but it was, you know, I read that and I went, oh, that's how you should do it. The reason that I think as creators, whether we create in business, we create in art, we create with whatever we do, that we get so excited if it looks like there's a way to do it, is because most of us don't feel like we can rely on the oven. We don't feel like we can rely on our muse. We don't feel like we can rely on the gods to give us another good idea. And so anything that looks like it might be more reliable than it'll come to you is really sexy. Now, the problem is almost everyone, except the person who wrote it, and sometimes even them, who puts forward a way to be reliably creative, it gets you into this. It becomes about you. It becomes about your process. It becomes about getting it right. It becomes about, it takes you even more away from the flow. Now, my guess is that the only difference between the way I'm talking about it and the way you experience it is because I've come to see, and I've come to see it because I keep putting myself in situations where that's all I've got. I always have, even before I understood the principles, I always noticed I did my best work on the spot. That's why I love radio. You know, no net. You know, that every time I go to the well, I get more confidence in the fact that there'll be something the next time I go to the well. Mm-hmm. And at some point, now I'm not saying I don't get insecure, I'm not saying I don't get lost along the way, but at some point, and it's different for everyone, you just kind of get the kind of faith that we have that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. It might not. I mean, that's genuinely true. But you know what? I'm good. like I don't really need to worry about that one. You know, it may be that one day I go to the well and there's nothing there. It may be that one day Mark goes quiet and never comes back. Right? You know? But really, that's not even worth thinking about. Because that's just not how it works. And so the value of seeing that this is part of the human design, this is part of the spiritual essence of who we are, this is the mind that we are an expression of, this divine energy that we are a form of. The more clearly you start to see that,
yeah,
or at least clear enough to play with it, mm-hmm, the easier it gets to rely on it and have faith in it. And that's the joy of the creative process. That's the learning curve. And you do. You develop a confidence, not in yourself. See, that's another one of the misattributions. People go, well, I have a lot of confidence in my ability to come up with a solution, which on a good day is great. But we don't have all good days. So if I've learned to rely on myself on a bad day, I'm screwed. And if there are people who are depending on me, they're screwed too. But if I see that it always comes from the same place, from the unknown, the not yet created, the formless nothingness, well, I can rely on that, because that's not dependent on my being in a good mood or a bad mood, having a good day or a bad day, being up for it or not being up for it. That's always available. It's ordinary. It's every... Gravity's here again? It was here yesterday keeping me to the earth. The infinite creative potential of this spiritual energy is available to me again? I just used it yesterday. At some point, it stops being remarkable and just becomes apparent.
You know how that works for me? A couple of things you said are so beautiful that I think one of the things about it is it's really touching not knowing. It's really a moment of unknown. And my colleagues, fellow psychologists, taught me this because there was a time we had a national certification program in the principals years ago. And I was assigned all the psychologists. And they would do well being quiet. They would do well until they got to a place they didn't know where they were going to go next. This little moment, what I would call like touching the creative energy, right? What they would do then is you go back, resort to their technique. What I help them with is to stay there. And once they stayed there and they create something came to them to share with their clients, then they had more comfort in this space in us of not knowing. And so that's what came to me in helping them. I didn't know this before helping them, but then I saw that's what they were up against. Because I took not knowing for granted because I really don't know, you know. So I'm just thankful for a few things, right? But I'm doing a lot of presentations. I'm just telling you this in my way. And I know I'm going to get assistance. So I start out a couple of weeks before, and I kind of like have a few things. I'll go this way, maybe this story, but I have no feeling for it. You know, that sounds okay. I still don't know where I'm going. But I stay reflective because I know it will show up. I know it'll show up. I'm driving along and something comes. Oh, that's going to be a great thing to speak about. Oh, man, I'll add that to it. At the Innate Health Conference last year in London, I had to do a plenary talk. And I did not know what I was going to say. I was there the evening before, and I didn't know what I was going to say. I had thoughts, but I really didn't know. And all of a sudden, people had been talking to me all through this, the last couple of days. All of a sudden, it came to me. It just added up. I knew where I was going. But I was in this time of unknown. And that's where the books look good. Because they give you comfort. They give you something to do rather than hang out and not knowing. Because you could get nervous hanging, wait a minute, I'm going on in 10 minutes. You know, when's it going to show up, you know? But like Michael's saying, as you do this more, you just know it'll be there for you because it's not you. It's not you.
And there's an arbitrariness to how long before we decide it's time to get insecure. Like, notice in the first couple of weeks, oh, I don't have any idea, but it's fine. And then at some point you start to go, man, I still don't have any idea. And whether that's 2 weeks or 1 week or 1 day or 1 hour or 1 minute, that's kind of arbitrary. You're in the unknown till you're not. You don't have an idea till you do. And if you don't think there's a real time by which I need an answer, then you stay in the unknown long enough.
You know, this is really something. I mean, it's not difficult. It's not outside of your reach. And I'll tell you, at the same talk, I came to a point where I had nothing. And it occurred to me wisely, time to stop. No, it did. It was time to stop. I had nothing. I had really talked. I had shared a lot, but I had nothing left. It was a nothing. It occurred to me, time to stop. Then I got in the way. I'm thinking, I didn't talk long. They gave me an hour and a half. I got to fill that up. See, I started thinking beyond this guidance system. So I made something up. And I talked to it. And I knew as I was doing it, it wasn't quite the same feeling of, you know, that kind of spiritual guidance. Now, when I looked at my watch, I had gone overtime. It knew I should stop. I overrode it. So it's there. It's so available. That's all I wanted to share with you on that story, is that it's available. And my colleagues, those psychologists, were overriding it because they couldn't hang for a second or so with being in the unknown. And I kind of overrode it because I got myself insecure around, you know, how long I'm supposed to speak. But if you see that really there is something that will be there for you to create, you get used to it.
You know, there's an element of partnership sometimes in the way that I experience it, of being in partnership with this intelligence. Sometimes I'm not there and it just is. Sometimes it seems like it's not there and I just am. But my favorite moments, I have to say, are the partnership. And I was thinking about the TED Talk where there's a countdown timer. Now, I'd never worked with that before, but it's big and it's in front of you. And, you know, they'd given us all these talks about now when the time goes, you know, we will not cut your microphone off immediately, but. And I just hadn't rehearsed with one because I'd never seen one. So I had 14 minutes, and I didn't know what I was saying, though I knew what my slides were. So I didn't know where I was supposed to be when. So I, at one point, was speaking, and I looked down at the countdown timer thinking I'd been speaking for about 2 minutes, and I'd been speaking for five. And my thinking went wild. And it was like, shit, shit, shit. Now, my wisdom came in and said, you don't want to look at that. And I did not look at it again until... at a certain point, it occurred to me to look at it again. And I was pretty much at that point, I could have stopped, but I still had things to say. And I looked down, and it was 30, 29. And those last 30 seconds were so sweet because it was still coming from that place. It was still coming out of the oven.
Yeah.
But I was there with it, riding it to the last second. And the last word came out as the clock hit zero. And it was so cool. Now, I'm not suggesting it's always like that. For me, it really isn't.
Yeah.
But just even knowing that it can be is why so many people fall in love with art, with whatever their expression is. And I've seen this in Google with people creating, you know, software, and I've seen it with artists. It's not unique to the arts. It is the creative process. And honestly, I think the gift of it is that I'm making this up. I do not know if this is true. I think the reasons that a lot of struggling artists choose to continue to struggle is not ego and is not stupidity or stubbornness. I know all of that is there often as well. But it's that the only time in their life where they touch God is when they create. And so they think they've got to keep in that form to have that experience. And when you start to see that you can have that experience anywhere, with anything, in a conversation with a friend, you can either try and think of things to say and seem like you know what you're talking about, or you can hang out and see what comes through. Mm-hmm. Writing an email, you can get through your email, or the email itself can be a chance to go to that place and see what comes through. And see what I remember seeing an interview with Russell Brand. I think he was at Oxford University. He was giving a talk there, and he was talking about when he learned that he could talk to women. And because he used to be very self-conscious about it. And he said, one day it just occurred to me, this is wisdom, right? It just occurred to him that if I just got really present with the woman I was talking to, stuff came out of my mouth that seemed fine. He found that place. He found that source in, you know. And look, whether you're using it to paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel or get laid, it's the same source. It's that same potential in different form. And you don't have to be an artist or a product creator or a chef or an anything to live from that place more and more and to let that spiritual energy come through you, that creative force come through you more and more of the time. And it's thrilling. Like I have no other word for it. It's thrilling. And that doesn't mean that there aren't times where I don't fucking hate my job. Because I do. I get caught up. I get up in my head. I start judging myself, judging what I've done, and all that. But honestly, who cares? Because that passes. Right? That just, it's like a thought fart. Right? Might stink for a little while afterwards, but then it's like it never happened. And I'm right back. Yeah, can we get a microphone here?
To both of you, I guess, is do you go back to what you've written or these seminars that you've taped and looked at it and go, oh my gosh, where did that come from? You know, that was like such, like you, I noticed you're picking up when Mark says stuff and saying, wow, that was great. I don't even know he realized it was as great as it was, but you observed it. So is there still that awe when you go back, even after doing this all these years, saying, wow, I know that couldn't have come from me. It came somewhere
else.
Oh,
my God. This was dinner last night. Right? We went to dinner last
night.
Well, that's why I was looking at him. But no, but I mean, that was the thing. It's like, this is what we were talking about at dinner last night.
Yeah.
That experience. Now, again, not always. Not constantly. Not everything. But more and more. And that is the thrill of living in and from this place. You don't know. You just don't know. Like there's a great G.K. Chesterton line where he wrote, how do I know what I think until I hear myself say it? Now, you can take that a few different ways, right? You can take that as being about this. But for me, it points to this. It points to this deeper creative energy that until we bring it into form, we don't know what form it. That's the gig. And it is not always going to take forms we like. That's part of the gig. But that's okay. Because you can go back to the well as many times as you want. It's not like you only get 35 tries. Right? You know, it's that old quote that's usually used as a positive thinking persistence quote. You know, I didn't fail. This is an Edison thing. You know, I didn't fail 2,000 times. I found 2,000 ways to not invent a light bulb. Or something like that. See, from that point of view, that just sounds like bullshit to me. But as a creator, which is what we all are, I just went back to the well again. And I went back to the well again. And it doesn't matter how many times I go back to the well.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many batches of cookies come out of the oven before I find one that I want to share and repeat and replicate. The oven doesn't wear out. The oven doesn't get discouraged. The oven doesn't think it's crap because the cookies don't taste good. We do that. The oven doesn't think it's great because the cookies taste good. We do that. That's the problem for me with self-esteem and artistry. I find it hysterical working in Hollywood that anybody can think that there is a connection between self and self-esteem and creativity, unless it's that the lower your self-esteem, the higher the creativity. Right? I was directing a thing with Gary Shandling, the comedian, back in my showbiz days, and he was really like down on himself for you know. And I said I was being just cheeky. I said I'm sorry, Gary. Am I not praising you enough? He said, don't worry about it. It's a black hole. It can't be filled. Right? But, I mean, you know, it's so clearly nothing to do with what we think of ourselves and our work, except that we get caught up in thinking that it is.
I have a question about what Mark was saying about that override. So I do have those thoughts where things just occur to me, and it seems it does have that feeling. But then I also have the thought of, like, I don't know, maybe later, maybe tomorrow, or that's stupid. Or, you know, I have the override. And so I'm wondering, why does the override feel so much more real than the thought that occurs?
The one that you've thought a thousand times before has more form, so it seems more real.
Okay.
The one that's new hasn't yet got much wax on the wick.
That makes sense. Okay.
Cool.
I think that took care of it. I think, yeah. I don't
know. So it's... have more of, it's all about the trust in this, isn't it? In this wick.
Well, here's why I probably wouldn't put it that way from my point of view. If I make it about the trust, I'm making it about me again. Now, if I see it, I don't have to trust it. I just do. So what I would say is it's all about insight. It's all about seeing it for reals, you know, as the kids today would say, right? It's that, because when you see it, you see it. It's like you don't have to trust what you see. You have to trust what you don't see. And as soon as it becomes about trusting, it becomes about you. And as soon as we get involved, oh dear God, now we're in psychology, and psychology and creativity do not mix. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I think that, so there's a couple of things about what you're saying that Sydney Banks on some of his audio tapes has said, at some point, you just have to see that this is true. At some point, you just have to see it. Now, when I have questions like that, what helps me, if I see this that I'm going to share with you then, is what's the truth of the matter? Go back to the truth of the matter, and that the truth of the matter is you're part of this intelligence in the universe. And it's there to assist you. At some point you're just gonna have to say, I'm gonna look there. You know, I'm gonna give it my all. But it can't be really a doing thing to get there, because it just appears. The creative process just appears. But there's like no setup for the creative process, and we're looking for a setup so we can really get it. And what taught me this is that, again, you know, a lot of this came to me through the teaching process. I've been doing a lot of teaching through the years. And I was in front of a group, and I was talking about how the principles help relationships. And for my own personal security, I had a great rap. I just had this wonderful rap. The last group I did it to shared it with last week, they really got something. I start in, and here's what I'm talking about, just appearing. What we've been telling you just occurred to me. You can't go there. It's a rap. It's not right for the group. It just came in.
Didn't you used to do a training exercise around that? I seem to remember you telling me that you used to do an exercise where as soon as the rap started appearing, George or somebody would interrupt you.
No, I don't think so.
I made that up.
That wasn't. that was.
I have a great story in my head about somebody who looks like him in my picture. Maybe I'll tell it later over a pint. Sorry.
I guess I'm trying to share with you that Sydney Banks has offered guides, but you can't look for a setup to get trust in your creativity. And without looking for it, it came to me. Now, it said, don't go any further. You've lost the groups. It's not going to help the group. But like I mentioned earlier, I had nothing else. But I knew to get quiet. I knew to get quiet. So I'm quiet. Then it occurs to me, you need to tell the group why you're quiet. You've been quiet a long time here, you know. So I tell the group, I said, look, here's what's going on. This is kind of new to me. I'm trying to trust the creative process. I'm trying to trust the intelligence I've been talking to you about. And where I wanted to go and teach you was not going to help you. But I could go there right now if you like. Or I could be quiet for a little longer and see what shows. What would you like? They said, go ahead and be quiet. Well, the minute I turned to the flip chart, it came to me, a whole new way of talking about the principles in relationship, the creative process showed up. And over time, I guess if I look at it over time, I just see that it's going to show up. I just got to see that there's something more that we are that's available to us with whatever we're doing. Really. And, you know, Sydney Banks says at some point you're going to have to just have, I told Michael this, faith in it, but I don't mean it like you've got to do faith. You just have to open up to that you are more than you're thinking about yourself, and that will assist you. It will guide you. And you know, and then discouragement or dissatisfaction with your product or anything like that, you start to see as clamping down on the creative process to live in that reality that you're creating. It's even helped me with making Tres Leches cake. I thought, it just occurred to me one time for our family Thanksgiving to make it. And I'm purely in the creative process when I make it. I've tried so many different kinds of flour and all of this. It's a very simple cake to make, but it's really been a lot. There's been a lot of the creative process in there. So I think wherever you're at, it's speaking to you. Like I played guitar a long time in my life. And I could tell you, when I was with our band, there were times where we didn't exist. We just followed one another. We just knew where this other person was going. I just knew. It just, something came over us, and we just knew where we were going. We had no really thinking. We didn't follow the charts or whatever. And we just followed this flow of creativity. But what I want for you is to just open up to, you don't have to do anything. You already have it. And to look there. Just look in the direction of what you have going for you being part of mind. Being part of this spiritual energy.
We should probably break in a minute, if that's okay. But I just want to say one thing just that just occurred to me from what you said about getting excited about the next thing that tells me how to do it. Remember Dumbo? Right? Dumbo, he got the little white feather, and that's why he could fly. And then he lost the feather and was freaked out. And then the mouse said, actually, I made it up. You can fly. And he could. Well, that's this, right? There is a natural wind beneath our wings. We are made to ride the current of this intelligence. And a lot of us have learned, made up, comforted ourselves with a feather along the way, a process, a ritual, a practice, an incantation, a team, whatever it is that we've thought, this is why I can do it. No, you can do it because you were born. And you will be able to do it at least until you die. It just comes with the equipment. Mm. It's just how it works. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. We'll come back at 4 for a final hour.